Let's go. All right, we are ready to start. So last time, we just finished off talking a little bit about Ma'amer, but we didn't quite put it together. And Ma'amer is gathering, so we're going to spend a few minutes talking about Ma'amer now, just trying to organize it. Hopefully it won't take too long. And then we're going to move into Dush. Okay, we're going to discuss Dush tonight, threshing, and the other issues that come together with Dush. I don't get enough. We'll finish it tonight. We might need a part two. I think we will need a part two most probably. But we'll do at least part one tonight of Dush. So let's start with Ma'amer. Okay, Ma'amer, we discussed last time, is gathering. You have your fruits in the field, or your wheat, or whatever you are, whatever you have in the field, and you go and harvest your fruit, vegetables, whatever it is, in the fields. So Ma'amer is the next step, which is basically after they're all harvested and cut down wherever they're coming from, trees, bushes, stalks, whatever, it's all in the field. So Ma'amer is gathering it all together in one pile, okay, one area. Then what you're going to do with it is once it's gathered together in one area, you're going to bring it over to the threshing floor and start threshing. That'll be afterwards, that'll be Dush. The question is, what are the parameters of Ma'amer? Okay, meaning it's very nice. Okay, gathering is great. I can gather sticks, I can gather silverware, I can gather toys, you know, I can gather a lot of things. What's considered to be the halachic definition of Ma'amer? Okay, so the answer is we know that it applies in the field with fruit that was just harvested. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch, so let's see in Sif Tes and Yud how it comes down in the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, I'll tell you before you even get to the Shulchan Aruch that the Gemara. Well, actually, we'll see in the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, the Gemara does. The Gemara mentions this case in Sif Tes, so we'll just read it here. It says, "Asur the kabetz melach mimaster fos hamelach." I think we read this last time already, if I remember correctly. You can't gather together salt from these places where, I don't know exactly what the English translation is. Basically, places we live in Israel, so you know, in the Dead Sea, there's spots where you have, you know, little things of salt that come from the sea and they dry up. And basically, what he's talking about here is taking, basically gathering together salt from these places and putting it in one pile. So you look at the Mishnah Berurah in Lamed Dalet, which is the first one in Sif Tet. So he says, "Sheish mekolot shet mamshich letochan mai min hayam." So you have places where water comes in from the sea. V'achama saraftan. Again, we're talking about ocean water here, which is salty. So the sun comes and literally the word is saraftan is to burn, lisrof. I don't know if it means to burn, it means to dry it out. And that becomes salt. And that's essentially what happens in many places around the Dead Sea. Okay, you have salt, what's the word? There's some pieces of salt that come
deposit.
Together. Yeah, deposits of salt, that's what I mean, thank you. Deposits of salt that end up sort of washing up on the side or even in the sea or whatever, and the sun comes and basically dries it out, and then you have all these places with salt right around the Dead Sea, which is, of course, where we get our Dead Sea salt from. So the Shulchan Aruch is saying, based on the Gemara, that gathering together those things of dried salt is actually going to be usher on Shabbos. Why? Shadom alamar, that's similar to ma'amer. Okay, so what he did here is, number one, he, based on the Gemara, said that ma'amer is not just fruits and vegetables, not just things that grow from the ground. It's also going to include salt. But what's the definition of what's included? Look at the next line. All right, you're not allowed to gather anything together from makom gidulo, as we mentioned last week. From the place where it grows, or the place gidulo doesn't mean just to grow. The place where it is, I guess, yeah. I don't want to call it growing. The place where it's naturally found. I think that's the best way to understand this. Okay, meaning salt doesn't grow in the ground, but it's naturally found there, and that's where it comes from. Even if it doesn't actually grow. So basically, what they say based on this is the following. Let's say it this way. Okay. Midoraisa ma'amer only applies to something which actually grows from the ground. All right, that's midoraisa. That's what the Mishnah Berurah points out in Lamed Vav. He says that ein imur ela begdulei karkas. The last couple words in Sif Lamed Vav in Mishnah Berurah, that imur, the gathering only applies midoraisa in a situation where it actually grows on the ground. Okay, that's the midoraisa, yeah. And therefore that's going to be fruits and vegetables and things like that. What the Shulchan Aruch is saying here, based on the Gemara, is that midrabanan, we extend that to be anything which is found naturally in the ground. Okay, it doesn't have to grow in the ground, but it's got to be found naturally in a place coming from the ground. And that's the case with the salt here. So that's why the Shulchan Aruch says aser, it doesn't say chayav. Chayav means that you'd be chayav a korban if you did it unintentionally. That's an iser d'oraisa. Here we're talking about Nisr Drabanan, but because it has a makom gidul, it's got a place in the ground where it comes from, so it's going to be included in the Malacha of Ma'amer as well. All right? So that's, again, going to exclude, seemingly going to exclude a lot of different items. So now if I ask you, you know, can you gather together silverware or toys or food or anything like that, like let's say pretzel food, not fruits and vegetables. So would they be included in Ma'amer, according to what we're saying? Do any of those have a makom gidulo, a place that they come from in the ground? No, they're all processed in some form. They're all made manufactured. So that's those things are not going to be included in Ma'amer. So Ma'amer is very, very limited. Right. The only shal I saw, I think, in the Sefer Orchel Shabbos, I think that's the Sefer that I saw it in, he wanted to maybe, if you gather together supplies in the place where they're manufactured, in the manufacturing building, is that considered Ma'amer? So he said, okay, I don't know, maybe that's Ma'amer. But that's, you know, we don't really care about that so much right now. It's not really so practical for the rest of us.
Oh, so he said the right there was the only class when it goes in the ground.
Correct.
Jerabanan.
Correct. What you see from the Shulchan Aruch, based on the Gemara, is that Jerabanan is anything which has a roots or basis in the ground. Meaning salt, which has a basis in the ground, would be included, but it doesn't grow on the ground, you understand? So it's not expanding it so much. It's not anything. It's just certain things that are naturally formed in the ground.
So,
all right?
So for example, if someone is, let's say, making a pile of sand at the beach, or even maybe, you know, gathering a shell or something at the beach, maybe that would be a derivative.
That's an interesting question. I did not think about that. It's possible. I hear what you're saying. The problem is, meaning, even before you get to that, it's already booked.
It's already booked.
It definitely booked. It's definitely usher. Before you get anywhere near Ma'amer, it's definitely usher. The question is, do you want to violate two Isur and say you're going to move it, and also you're going to put it together? So it's an interesting question. Maybe. You know.
So what about just spilled salt?
What'd you say?
What about spilled salt on the table? Like,
so again, it's not the place that it's formed, so that's why it's not going to be a problem.
Got it.
Okay, it's only the place where it's formed. Normally, that's, again, we'll see in a minute, but most of the time it's the place where it's formed. So sand, I can hear that. Meaning sand, maybe shells. Are shells found? How are shells found? I don't remember.
I mean, I bet, you know, you kind of naturally find them wherever you find the beach and water. Right. You know, naturally find them on the seashore.
Right. Right. But were they made there? Were they formed there? Just remind me.
I don't know
much about it. So I don't know, shells maybe not, but sand I could hear. I mean, I hear that. It's an interesting idea. If you gather sand together, but again, sand is everywhere, so how does that even help? At least salt, you know, gather there, like, as a purpose, it does something. For sand, sand is all over the beach. Okay, I hear the idea. It's an interesting idea. I don't know for sure that it would work, but it's something to think about. Okay, good. So that's that. If you look now at Shulchan Aruch Sif Yud, we have find another important point of Ma'amer, that the story comes together. Havakavis Tevela, V'yasavim Mena Igul, O'shanakav Te'enim V'ichnis HaChavel Mehem, Bohem, Hachadis Kavs Guv Echad, Haris that told us Ma'amer V'chayev, V'chayim Koyotze V'ze. Basically, you gather together Tevela, okay, which we said was, I think it said Tevela was figs. I never remember whether it's figs or dates. I think it's pressed figs. And you maybe say a circle out of them. Or you took te'enim, which is another, you know, word for figs. Not pressed figs, but just regular figs. And you put a rope inside of them, and you basically made a necklace out of them until it comes to be nitkabsu guf echad. It's gathered together as one body. Okay? And it's one entity. So in that case, he said that that's a toldo of ma'amer. It's midoraisa that's ma'amer, and you're chayev. Wow. What's wrong with that halacha? We just said in Sif Tet that it's all based on where the place where it's naturally coming from. So you would think that ma'amer, for certainly for fruits in this case, would apply if you gather the fruits together from the field. But if you're doing it in your house, then why would that apply? Now, to be honest, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't actually say where you're doing this. Okay, and the Rambam, where he got it from, this comes from the Rambam. The Rambam also does not say where you're doing it. So one could argue, and some do say, that maybe he meant that it's done in front of the field.
Maybe the natural way, this is a way, obviously, of putting figs or produce together, maybe the place it's done is in the field.
Right. Could be. The problem is, he doesn't spell that out. I mean, they don't say if you did it in the field. It sounds like it could be anywhere. It doesn't matter where you're doing. That's what it sounds like, from lack of a more specific explanation here. And that's how the Mishnah Berurah understands it. Mm-hmm. He says, where is it here? Look at this Mishnah Berurah in Sifkat Lamed Chet. All right, this is the one that he has to sif yud here. What does he say here? Let's see what he says. So he explains, Shadarka Shalos and Aperos Lachabra Bilfenze. This is a normal way to gather together or to attach together these fruits. Make a nice necklace out of it. That's, again, probably something they used to do. Very nice. But why? Where does it happen? So he says, V'ayim Nishmat Adam. Okay, the Nishmat Adam is the author, is the same person who wrote the Chai Adam, if you're familiar with the Chai Adam, the halachic word.
What's
the Nishmat Adam? What'd you say? Nishmat Adam is basically his expanded commentary on the Chai Adam. I mean, he wrote it, it's in the same book. And he wrote either notes on the bottom or in the back, basically explaining at length some of the halachas that he says. Because the Chai Adam, until the Mishnah Berurah, is basically the Exactly. Yeah. Very good. Right. Right. Exactly. That's the secret that they went to when they want to form practical halacha, written by Rav Danzig, for I guess I don't know, at least 150 years probably. That was the one. Thank you, Mishnah Berurah. I guess, and also the Aruch HaShulchan, and you know, over time they basically became the go-to svarim for the bottom line halacha. But the Chayyadim is a very important sefer, and the Nishmas Adam explaining it. So he says that this is true. Lost the place here. He says that the af kishosa came b'bayis chayav mishum amir. Even if you do it at home, you're chayav from amir mitoraisa. The oven kazeh. In this way, asui lasos gam b'bayis kvasadeh. When you do it in this way to gather, you know, to put it together in a necklace or whatever, it's normally done at home the same way that it's done in the field. Meaning, it's just as common to do it at home as it would be to do it in the field. So still, it doesn't really explain it. And he says, okay, it's very nice that it's common at home, but still, it's not really makom gidula. What's going on here? This is a tough question. Okay? Not so easy to explain. One of the answers that I saw, I guess the easiest way to explain it, which is not great, but the easiest way to explain it is probably that that apparently, according to these opinions, ma'amer will apply at home as well, but only for acts which are very, very, very common at home. Meaning, everybody agrees that it has to be an item which comes from the ground. Okay? Nobody's going to say that it's ma'amer for pretzels or for cups or things like that. It has to be something either that grows in the ground or is, you know, formed in the ground. However, what we're saying here is that if you gather together that item at home in a very, very, very normal, common way that's commonly done at home and not specifically done in the field, so then according to this opinion, it would seem to be that, that you'd be chayv or ma'amer for that also. So according to that, basically, again, when you put it together as a necklace, that's apparently was a common activity of the way to gather it together at home. Now it'd be chayiv. That doesn't mean that you'd be chayiv every time you gather together fruits at home. Okay, it means in this particular way of making a necklace or something, or making with a rope, if in that time that was common, and maybe today also making a necklace with beads, if beads were fruits, you know, let's say you used fruits or whatever, and made holes in them, something like that, if that was common, so one could argue that's ma'amer. But again, halacha lemaisa, in most cases that we would discuss of gathering things at home, probably would not be included.
I think last time you said you had a basket of apples and you spilled them.
Okay, good. So that question, based on what I'm saying now, that should not be included, because that's not a normal method of doing things at home. I mean, you don't normally gather together apples at home. You do it in the field. It happens to have spilled, so you pick it up. But it's not a normal, constructive type of gathering at home. What's the purpose? You drop it and you pick it up. It's not, you're not constructing anything. It's not like making a bead or a necklace. You understand? Mm-hmm. So if you look in the, I don't know if anybody has the screenshot, so I'll read it to you here. If you want to know where it is, it's in Perek Chavav. The halacha is halacha Chav Dalad. So he says here, this is the halacha that he talked about in terms of fruits that fall off the tree. So we said he says here that if they fell off the tree, even if they fell off before Shabbos, you're not allowed to gather them together on Shabbos, again in the field, because of Ma'amer. And then he says that if fruits fell in a place which is not where they grew, meaning let's say in your courtyard, let's say you don't have a tree there. Okay, they fell in the courtyard, but there's no tree. It's not a normal place to gather them together. So he says you're allowed to gather them together little by little, but you shouldn't put them in a basket. I mean, you shouldn't gather together a lot and put them in the basket. Why? That's a different problem of uvda d'chol, which we're not going to get into now, but there's a different halacha in the Shulchan Aruch that if you gather together a lot of things from the ground, it's a problem of uvda d'chol. This is even if it's not where the tree is, but if it's outside.
How the fruits would be on the ground without a tree because, let's say, you just spilled it out of the
I guess
basket.
So. I don't know. I guess so. I guess so.
They didn't grow at all there.
I guess so. I guess so.
Okay.
I guess so.
This is taking one little by little.
Yeah. Now let me finish. And then he says, if they fell in one place, meaning it's not that they're scattered all over the ground, if they fell in one place, then you're allowed to gather them together. Okay, that's also meaning that it's not even uvda d'chol in that situation. That's what the Shulchan Aruch is.
This
is all also, that's all drabbanan. Okay, that's if you want to know where it is. It's based on someone's shin lamed hay, which we're not going to look at it inside. But that's where he talks about this type of thing of uvda d'chol of gathering together.
It looks like the yisur meter immediately
derives. Right. What's interesting though is that
otherwise really
correct. Right. What's interesting though is they don't really talk so much about ma'amer when it comes to this. This is more about uvda d'chol. Okay, which is interesting. It's very interesting. Okay. And he has a whole footnote here about it in the Shmir Shabbos. It's very interesting. He discusses whether you can pick up eggs on Shabbos if they're weighed, let's say in a chicken coop. Is that a problem of either uvda d'chol or anything or not? Some people apparently say that might be a problem.
It's not a problem of ma'amer, but it doesn't come from the ground.
Correct, right, but it might be a problem of uvda d'chol. Again, how do you define uvda d'chol? It's a weekly activity. What does that mean? We have no idea. Okay, we'll talk about that some other time. It's not so clear what is defined as uvda d'chol, as a weekly activity. You could make anything a weekly activity. There's a few scatter cases.
Related to food. because
could be maybe
could
it's
be on top of other quickly things.
Maybe it's hard to say. There's
something to do. We don't need to do Shabbos and Yom Tov.
It's hard to say. In the Shulchan Aruch, there's scattered cases of the Chol. It's hard to like put your finger around it. At some point, we'll learn it and we'll put them together, and you'll see it's a little confusing. But for now, again, this is one of the examples of the Chol of gathering these fruits together, foods together outside. Then he says, if fruits were scattered in your house, like on the floor, you're allowed to sweep them up and pick them up and put them, you know, do whatever you want with them. Why? Because that's not over the hole, apparently, if it's in your house. Again, what's the difference? We're not going to get into it now. It's not so clear exactly. And it's definitely not ma'amer, because we're not talking about a normal, constructive type of gathering in your house that's normally done there. Okay, it's just the fruits fell, so you pick them up and put them in the basket. That's not the same thing as the case of the necklace with the pressed figs or whatever. Okay, so the halacha l'mayis, the bottom line, is ma'amer. They're pretty limited in halacha. You know, it's interesting to talk about, but there's not too many cases that are really going to be a serious shiloh of ma'amer, other than, you know, some of those cases where you might make something at home.
What about flower petals that fall in the room?
Interesting. I think it would be the same thing as this thing here, which is basically that's not what we're talking about. That's not a normal thing to do at home. And even if you gather them together, it's not really constructive in any way. Like, why? You know, it's not like you're not trying to do something with it. You're not trying to make them into something. You know, so, and definitely it's not, it's probably the same thing as the other cases we talked about. It's not really a normal thing that's done at home, and it's not in the field. So, mistama should be mutter. The only question is whether it's mukser or not. So, if it's part of the products that you designated for Shabbos to be your nice table decoration, in which case it's not muksa, so I guess it would be okay. I guess so. Maybe. Probably. Okay. Very good. Let's go to dash. All right. So, our next malacha is dash. What does dash mean? So, dash is translated into English as threshing. And what is threshing? Anybody know what threshing is?
No.
Nice big fancy word. What does it mean? Yeah. So let's take the next step here. Okay, we'll take wheat. All right, easy example. Have our wheat. Dash probably doesn't even apply to fruits. Okay, but wheat and barley and things like that and grains is really the case where dash applies. You take them, you harvest them in the field, you gather them together. That's ma'amer. And now you're going to schlep them all. Bring them to your threshing floor, which in Hebrew is called the gorin, gimel resh nun. You find it in Tanakh in a few places, the gorin. That's the threshing floor. So that's where you do your threshing. What exactly is threshing? So threshing, essentially what happens is you're taking the wheat and you're separating it. Okay, you're taking out the part that you want, the inside part, known as the kernel, and extracting that or separating that from the outside part that you don't want, which is usually called the chaff, C-H-A-F-F. Essentially, you're separating the inside part that you want from the outside part that you don't want and getting rid of it. How do you do that? So in the Gomorrah, the way that it was usually done was either to use some sort of big staff or stick or something like that and whack it, or to stamp on it with your feet, or to get a big animal, like an ox, to go and walk around on it and stamp on it. And in that way, when they do that to the sheaves, so essentially it would separate the chaff, the outside part, from the kernels on the inside. Now you got your inside out, you got your kernel out. Of course, the kernel is later going to be used in order to make flour, and the flour that we use in order to make bread. Okay, that's essentially the way that it usually works.
The gourd is the floor that they
use. Yeah, it's the special floor that they used to use, called the threshing floor. That's basically what dush is. Okay, we'll talk about later. Is dush sounds very much like boer when you talk about it this way. Boer is separating the good from the bad. And we know what boer is. It applies in a lot of situations which you may not realize, but we'll get to that probably in 2 weeks. But what's the difference between dush and boer in terms of just conceptually? How are they different if both of them are involved separating?
I'm used to separate yet. If you say that part again,
okay. So dash means let's say it this way. Okay, dash means threshing. Okay, threshing means to separate the kernel on the inside from the chaff on the outside. Now, what is the av malacha of dash? So it's not so clear what the av malacha is. It's the primary method of doing it. So some achronim say, we saw this where. Now, one sefer called the Shvisas HaShavis mentions this point, I think. And there's another version in the Meiri, one of the Rishonim. Slightly different version, but same idea. It's done not with your hand. It's done the way they used to do it in the threshing floor, which is basically either to do it with an animal, an animal stepping on it, or to use like a utensil, okay, like a staff or something like that, and you whack it and it comes out.
But that part breaks apart. It doesn't have to be separate yet. I'm asking.
No, but once it's broken, it's separate. Okay, it's still separate.
It's on the floor together.
Exactly. So on. We'll get to that. Okay, but that's how they understand the av malacha of dash. Okay, but what's the idea behind dash? The idea behind the av malacha is to separate the two. So therefore, the toldos of of dash are going to include, the easiest one to include is called mefarik. Mefarik means to extract. And anything that you extract, the inside part that you want from the outside part that you don't want, is going to be included as dash. So even if you didn't use an animal, you didn't use a utensil, anytime you extract an inside part from an outside part, that's going to seemingly be dash.
Yeah, we'll have to... So maybe, and I was making sure what's distinct about dash.
Okay, good, good, good. Yeah.
We haven't gotten there yet, but you know, horror.
That's fine.
The dash is that you start out with a single unit, not distinct things. Start with a single unit, exactly. And you break the single unit into multiple units.
Excellent. Okay, so that might be the explanation of Rabbeinu Chananel in the Gemara. Rabbeinu Chananel, the Rishon, so he wants to say, very good, he wants to suggest that the difference between Borer and Dosh is basically that Dosh is one unit that you separate into two parts. Borer is a later stage. What's happening in Borer? So Borer, basically what's happening is that you have on the ground, you have your kernels, you have your chaff, you have your rocks and dirt on the ground, and essentially what Borer is, the taking away of the chaff is called Zora. Okay, we'll get to that also. That's another kind of separation. You do that by it's called winnowing. Okay, winnowing basically takes some sort of funnel device and you blow away all the chaff. So the chaff goes away. And you're left now with kernels and whatever dirt and rocks is on the ground. So Borer basically is taking away the rocks and the dirt on the ground and leaving yourself with the kernels. Okay? But the rocks and the dirt and the kernels are never attached together. It's not one unit. It's just a big mixture. And all mixed together on the ground. Okay? As opposed to dash, where you have one unit with the inside part that you want and the outside part that you don't want. So one is separation, the other one is, I would call, selection. Borer might be selection. You take the part that you want or the part that you don't want and set it out, but it's not separating two things that are connected together. Okay, that's Rabbeinu Chananel's explanation. There might be others as well. Not everybody agrees to that. Some people would say that even if it's one unit, it's still borer. And we'll have to learn about that when we do borer. It's just going to take us a while, because borer is a very, very large and important halacha. But for now, that's good to start. Okay, we'll see later if you hold that Borer includes also things that are, you know, one unit, two parts together. Then we have to find a different explanation of why dash is different. And the answer might be that dash is not just separation; it's actually extraction. Okay, it has to be a case where there's something on the outside which covers it, and an inside part that you want. You take the inside part that you want from the outside part that you don't want. It's not just separation; it's actually extraction to extract the in from the out. Okay, that's what happens in the case of wheat with the kernel.
What about peeling an orange?
Okay, so good. So now let's jump. We're going to jump a lot of Gemaras and a lot of Rishonim. Okay, to the practical halacha. Okay, there's some interesting Gemaras. I'm sorry. What's that?
No more oranges on Shabbos.
No. Okay. Good. So we'll have to get to it. Let's say the following. When we talk about halacha, so the question is, how far does dash go? I mean, when you talk about this type of extraction or separation, what kind of cases, how many cases are going to be included? Okay, any kind of case of, let's say, certain types of fruits or vegetables, okay, peeling, or cases of nuts, which you mentioned, all sorts of kinds of nuts with shells, are those cases all going to be included in dash?
Guaranteed.
Okay, every single case like that, you have a big shiloh. Okay, is that going to be dash or not? On surface, one would think that probably it is.
Yeah.
But yet, many people do it, and yet it seems like, well, that's not fair. Why should we say that? We can't eat that shots. What?
You have to feel it.
Okay, good. So you're like three sure in the head. You have a good idea. You gotta you have to eat it, right? So you have a very good idea. That's often the heter for a lot of these things. But
what was it?
The question is derech achilas, the way that you eat. I mean, the way that you eat is not a malacha. But we have to get there. Right? We didn't get there yet. Let's learn about the process a little bit. How do we get to that point of saying that that's okay? So if you look here in your Mishnah Berurah and Shulchan Aruch, jump back to Siman Shin Yud Tes.
Say again.
Shin Yud Tes. And this is the siman that deals with Boer. But there's one halach on here. One halach on here also that deals a little bit with Dash, and that's Siv Vav. Okay, Siman Shin Yud Tes, Siv Vav. Yeah, so we're going to skip the case in the Shulchan Aruch because it's going to be a little complicated. I can sort of try to summarize it for you, but it's a little tricky, and I don't want to get stuck in that. If we get stuck in that, we're never going to get to the part that we want. Essentially, what he's talking about here is like pods or peas in a pod or something like that, where there are certain ways that you're not allowed, you may not be allowed to extract the pod from the inside, but if you do it in certain ways with the shinoi and you want to eat it right away and a few factors together, so maybe it's allowed. Okay, that's the case in the Shulchan Aruch. Now that is similar to dash, so that's why he says there that's going to be a problem. And again, it's not so practical for us because most of us don't have like pods that we do this for. The only case would be if you had actually like peas in a pod for real.
Yeah, or like what's very common now is what's called
sabi.
Like with
Oh, sorry. Edamame.
Edamame. Edamame, you know what edamame is?
No, that's not good at all.
It's, oh, we just had it for dinner tonight.
It's very common. You get the frozen food section, and it's basically these legumes in a pot.
Okay, yeah.
Legumes in a very pot, and you cook it in a pot, and you just literally split them open and eat the legumes out of the pot, so literally.
They're cooked inside?
Yeah. I mean, they're very popular these days. Very good. Very good.
Interesting. So you open it up after
soy. That's what it is. It's soybeans.
Interesting.
Soybeans are the pot.
So after you cook it, then you take it out?
Yeah, you cook it. You have a thing of all about.
Interesting. Okay, so I guess maybe we should do it then.
Like beans in a pot.
Yeah. Soybeans, okay.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay. So maybe we have to you have it here. Now look at that. All right, so we might have to go through that halacha a little bit more then.
Audio vision.
Look at that. Okay. Very nice. Yeah, I guess they're... Yeah. Yeah.
I wiped my shirt before I told them they were...
Oops, sorry.
Okay.
Thank
you. Okay. Shkrach. Okay, so we'll have to see what we do with that.
The issue with this is that because you're separating...
Okay, so we'll have to. You know what? Let's. Okay, let's do. Let's do the following. So the Shulchan Aruch. We'll do the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, and then I hope we'll have time. So I'll read you some of the stuff in Shmir Shah, because he's got a lot of halachas about these points. We'll see if we can. We'll see what we can cover in a short amount of time. Okay. So in the Shulchan Aruch, what he's talking about here again is trying to take these things out of the pods. Which he says you can't do in the normal way because it looks like dash. It's not actually dash because it's not the dash that's done in the threshing floor. Okay, it's a bit of a different stage along the way. There you're talking about things which you have a kernel and a chaff, and the kernel's going to be ground into flour. That's not really the same stage as we're talking about here.
What does modeling mean, by the way?
What's the word? Basically, oh gosh, what was the translation of this word? I forgot already. The idea is basically to pop it open or to roll it open or something like that. Okay. Again, I paused. I don't know the exact word. Mm-hmm. I just looked this up yesterday to find out what the word was. I get the share yesterday in Hakotel and I forgot. It's giving me now what the actual translation of the word is. I'm sorry. I don't remember. If you want to look it up in the Gemara, it's in the Gemara in Beitza and Daf Yud Bet and the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Kukalchet. That's where it comes up. That's where this is coming from. So here they say, based on it's Machlokas in the Gemara, but here that we pass on like the Shita of the Chachamim, who say that you're not allowed to do that, except, again, it was done with a Shinoi. Okay, it's done in a different way, either with the tips of your fingers, you usually have to like pull it open, but if you do it like with the tips of your fingers, somehow, again, I don't know how to do this exactly, but you do it with the tips of your fingers, plus, they add in here also, there are, what's it called, there, it could be if you do it specifically to eat right away, so that makes it a little bit better as well, and then the Ramah says that, even though you're basically extracting, so since you're doing it kilachar yad, like it's not the normal way of opening these things. Maybe for you it is for these guys, but the normal way of extracting is not usually done through the tips of your fingers. So he says that's considered to be enough of a shinoi. And then if you do it to eat right away, so it's more basically like what Moshe said. It's a little more like derech achila. Plus, it's not the normal method of how you would open them normally. So that's going to make it more permissible. And then the Ramah says v'yesh machmir. He says some are machmir. He says that's not really the case in the Gemara. You can't do it. Okay. And then the Ramah says you can't do it. Okay. V'lachein asur l'farekai gozim luzim gozim gedolim mitoch klipasana yuka. He says because of that, therefore you cannot extract nuts, different kinds of nuts, walnuts, almonds, whatever. I'm sorry, shkedim is almonds, walnuts, or big nuts from their shells on Shabbos. Now, one second. We didn't finish yet. What type of shell is he talking about here? Read very carefully. It says... exactly, the green shell.
What is the green shell?
So,
like an almond.
What?
Like an almond.
Maybe.
Sometimes the nut will have the hard shell, but then they have a very thin thing right on the nut itself.
Like a peanut.
Like a peanut, for example, like a peanut, yeah.
Right, so you got the right idea, but you're missing one step, which I actually didn't know about either until I learned this. But take a look here. The Mishnah Berurah number, which one is it? Chav Dalet. Okay. No. Mishnah Berurah Chav Dalet. So he's going to hint to it here, and then I'll explain to you what he means. He says, you're not allowed to take off the green shell. Does that make kimitoch hashibon? That's similar to basically taking a thing of wheat, and taking the kernel out of the stalk. Okay? Avali says, Lekule alam mutar l'shaber aklipa akasha. Everybody agrees you're allowed to take off the hard shell. L'klof gam aklipa hadaka. And also to take off the thin shell. The thin covering shell. It goes at the top of the...
That's the peanut itself. The thin little stuff on the peanut.
Okay, so he's got two things here. Okay, two shells. But both of these are okay. Both of these are mutter. The only one that's usher is the green one on top. What's the green one? So there's actually two or three shells going on with these. Again, he's talking about these kinds of nuts here, which would be walnuts. But anyway, peanuts might be the same thing. You have to figure out what they do exactly. But basically, it's like this. Okay, basically, there's another shell on some of these nuts which exists, which is already taken off before you even see it. Okay, it's taken off in the field or in the processing. Okay, again, I don't know what the actual...
Like an almond is.
Maybe. Again, I
have... Doesn't the almond have something over the shell?
So anything like that. They take it off before you even see it in the store. Okay, it's taken off in my processing, manufacturing, in the field, wherever it is, it's taken off. So that's the one that the Ramah is saying you're not allowed to take off on Shabbos. But the hard shell that you get, either peanut or walnut or whatever, that you break open, and then also the thin one underneath that, the Mishnah verse says both of those are okay. But the question is why? What's going on here? What's the logic behind this? Why are those okay and the other one's not okay? So this actually is not so simple to answer. You can throw out if you have any ideas, you can suggest them. But in Achronim, they're actually not so sure what to do with this Ramah here. So there's different explanations of why the Ramah said that, you know, why he distinguished in this way. I'll tell you the easiest one to understand. And this is based on the way that Rav Rimon, who, and I'll show you, he's the one that I work with for my curriculum. So he, in his sheet, so this is, I think, the way that he tried to explain the opinion of, I think it's the Chayyot, actually. I think it's the Chayyot who says this. And then the Eglay Tal, the Sakhachar Rav, he expanded on it a little more. When you put it all together, this is basically what comes out. Basically, the idea here is that dosh is considered to be more of a malacha done in the field. And, I mean, it's not really defined as a malacha that you do in your house. And that's preparation for food, basically what you were saying before. All right. In order to really be dosh, it's got to be a malacha which is done in the field. And therefore, the only time that extracting or separating a shell or whatever is going to be dosh, even midrabanan, even which looks like dosh or whatever, is only for something which is normally taken off in the field, not something that you do 2 seconds before you eat it. Okay, so based on that, what they're trying to say is that this green shell, or whatever other shell you might have on an almond or a walnut or whatever, which is taken off a long time before you see it, that's considered to be dosh, because that's a malacha which is done closer to the point of the field. That's not a malacha, that's not an action that you would do right before you eat it. Nobody does that before they eat it in the house. It's already done before that. Okay. However, any type of extraction or separation or cracking of a nut with a shell or whatever, that's done at your table, you know, right before you're going to eat it, right before when you're preparing your meal or your snacks or whatever, that's not dosh. Okay, that's mutter, that's derech achila. And that's why the Mishnah Berurah is basically saying here that you're allowed to break the shell, the hard shell of the nut, and the soft, thin shell underneath it as well. Because those are things that if you break them, you do it right before you eat. So that's not dosh, okay, it's derech achila. You understand the difference? Again, this is not such a simple point, okay, this is complicated. And what I gave you is basically like a little bit of the chayot, a little bit of the egletal, all put together. But that's essentially the idea, a little bit of every moment. But that's essentially the idea. Okay. So according to that, it would be mutter to break. Basically, if you have, you know, any kind of nut that we were just talking about, any nut that is normally cracked or whatever you do to take apart the shell right before you eat it, that would be mutter to do on Shabbos. Okay. Oh, that would seem to be what comes out from here.
Not with the nut cracker.
Hold on, we'll get to that. The answer is actually that's probably mutter also.
Let me ask you with that. Again, I don't know my nuts at all. But let's say, neither do I.
Okay. I'm not, unfortunately, not a nut person.
It seems that almond has like a soft green cover on the outside, then it has the shell we all wait for custard. Right. So when they prepare in the field,
right,
you know, they take off the soft green cover and then they only bring it to the house with the hard cover on it.
Right.
I mean, that makes some sense because maybe it's adequately protected and preserved with only the inner cover on it for any uses or afterward.
Right.
But let's say the nut, I don't know if this is truly what I'm saying, but are there some nuts where they don't have a soft green cover, the only cover they have, although maybe there's nothing to fix into a tree, so in others, I guess that soft green cover is what holds them onto the branch of the tree. If they only had like a hard shell, maybe it presupposes there's already some other shell that actually holds the tree. But if there were some nuts or something which only have like the shell we see, would that be problematic? Because they don't have another shell on top, or there really aren't nuts like that.
Okay, so to be honest, again, I'm not a nut person either. You probably have to test the healthy people here. So. But I think what we would say, you're going to have to see what this bears to tell, but I'm pretty sure that you would say that anything which is basically done in the house, if you do it before you eat, even if it's only one shell, then that's okay. That's the main issue. Yeah. If it's done in the field, then it would be usher for you to do it. But if it's something that you usually do at home, even if it's just one shell, that would still be mutter. I think that's the way that's usually looked at. Again, according to the way that I explained it. But again, there are variations, okay? The way that, the you know, there's different ways of explaining that point. They're not all, they all said the same thing. Just for example, I think it's the Chayyadu, which says it's not derech disha. It's not normal to the dush to take off the shell. It doesn't explain what that means. So that's when, you know, the Tal comes along and he tries to explain a little bit more based on what I said, and then Ramon explains a little more. Like, these points are very unclear in the sources. I'm trying to give you the bottom line in a way that makes sense. That takes 3 minutes instead of like an hour. But again, based on the way we're explaining it, I think it should be that would be mutter if it's something which is normally done before you get it. Okay. If you want to look at Shmirah Shabbos, I guess nobody here has Shmirah Shabbos here. Does anybody have it at home, or nobody has it at all?
Yeah,
okay, we're not sure if you can tell them we're going to be. What?
I have it in English.
Okay, you can bring it next time if you want. If I remember next time, I'll bring my other copy also. I have a second copy. So he's got a whole section here in Parag Gimel. Okay, Parag Gimel is a section on Borer. And in the section on Borer, he has a whole discussion, a whole section on removing shells, because shells could be a question of Borer and also a question of Dush. Okay, in terms of Borer, we will leave that out for now. We're going to come back to that later. For Borer, it's usually assumed that it is allowed for Borer if you're taking out the part inside that you want and you do it shortly before you eat. Okay. However, in terms of Dush, so again, we just discussed right now, in many cases, it's going to be permissible. And by the way, the same thing will be true also for any type of vegetable that you have, an onion, a cucumber, where you peel the peel off. Okay, even if the peel is not edible, but if it's something you do at home, so according to what we're saying, that should be mutter also. And that's what most of the poskim pass. And any of those kinds of things is going to be mutter to peel at home. The only shaila is, how do you do it in a way which avoids boer? Okay, that's going to be the question that we'll deal with when we get to boer. But that's basically when it comes to that. I'm going to leave that all out for now. Now, in terms of a little more about nuts here. Let's see here. Okay, so let me give you a couple, one or two halachas here that he talks about in terms of the nuts. Okay, halachah l'maisa. So the first one is actually the case of the peas, all right? I think if I get my Hebrew correct here. I'll read it to you when you tell me if this is what he means. Okay? Or I guess legumes. Asur lahotzi kitniot. Okay, peas or legumes. Kigon afuna. You know afunas? Afunas peas, right? Okay. O shuit, which is bean. I don't know if there's a specific kind of bean, but it's the beans that we often use for our cholent. What?
Black bean.
Okay, I don't know if it matters which kind of bean, but the problem is to take it out mitoch tarmi lehen. Okay, tarmi lehen is the modern Hebrew word for pods, I think. I think it basically is this, right?
Yes, you also get grain beans like that.
Yeah, I'm saying that the word tarmil, I think, is the pod, right? I think it's the Hebrew word for pod. Okay, why? Sheken yesh bazeh isur disha. Okay, that is a problem of dash. However, he says, el im kain gama tarmilim ru'uyim la'achila. Okay, go in tarmile afuna bo'odam yerukim. Okay, if the pod is edible by itself, meaning it's not just a shell, a hard shell, if it's edible by itself, so then it should be it's permissible while it's still green. Meaning if it's edible and looks green, so then it'd be okay to take it out, because basically you're taking out a food from a food. But if it's inedible, then it would be forbidden. Okay, what'd you say? Oh, so that's the question. So to be honest, I don't have a good answer for that question. I'm not sure exactly. I need to... Right. It's a good question.
If the shells in the pods are edible...
Okay. Okay, good.
I mean, these things, nuts, are somehow different. Why? I don't know.
Right. Okay.
So you can't use these on Shabbat.
So here's the question, all right? So this is tough, all right?
No, it's not. It's
Which one's not edible?
This is the outside. This is inedible.
Oh, really? This is not edible?
This is soy.
Soy is inedible. Nobody...
It's interesting.
Yeah,
okay, good. So these are some tough questions. Okay, I mean, according to what he's saying here, if the outside is inedible, then you can't open it up on Shabbos. But the question is, what? You cannot. But the question is, what? Well, you ask, why? Why is that?
All the time, because
it was Japanese Shabbos night.
What?
You can get them from the store that are pre.
Yes, then they take
one. Interesting. The shiloh, again, the shiloh they ask is.
What about garinim?
So garinim. Can you eat the outside? Or can't eat the outside. Okay. So the question is basically, right? So that's the question. What's the difference between this and what I told you before? Okay. I mean, why is this different than all the pieces of nuts that I told you before? That it's okay if you do it in your house. So there is a humongous footnote here on Shmirah Shabbos Kilchas. It's in the new version. It's footnote 104. To be honest, I have to apologize. I did not have a chance to read this whole footnote. Okay, but the answer is here. Okay, but unfortunately, I really apologize. I just have not had a chance to actually sit down and read this footnote, because it would take me 10 minutes to read it. But I did not do it. What he does basically in the footnote, he quotes the source of this halacha, the Ramah, we read before, with the case of the green shell on the outside. and then he doesn't mention the Mishnah Berurah. But then he asks, but then why is it different than some of the other types of peanuts that we said is okay? He asked the question himself. And he's got basically a humongous footnote here to try to explain why that might be. And basically, again, he's got this idea, I'm skimming it now. He wants to say maybe that these kinds of things, the way that they normally do it is to open it up when it's in a field. Okay, without its shell. So in that case, if you've got it with a shell, then maybe it's also to open, just like the case of the green shell in the case of the walnut. If you say that, then the question is, well, if this is the way that you normally buy it in the store, meaning for things like this or peas that you do normally buy this way, so really this should be included in the Heter of the Mishnah Berurah. Okay, so again, as I'd say that, logically, that's what I would think. Okay, and I would think that it should be included in the Heter and it should be Mutter, which I think somewhere in this footnote, I think he does imply that. The problem is in the top part where he says the Halacha, he says it's Osir. Okay, so I'll have to get back to you on that again. I apologize, I did not have a chance to finish reading this footnote completely and look around on this particular point.
I just had a thought about this again.
Okay.
I don't think there's any merit to this. But let's assume the normal case of a nut is that a nut has a soft green outer shell, which is what connects the nut to the tree.
Okay,
so already that's been removed before it arrives in your house.
Right.
So maybe with something like this, where you have an inedible pod, they want to have the same paradigm for something like this as for a nut. So so you know what's there to move except this thing? So there's nothing else to remove because the growth is on the tree.
Right.
So this is all there is to remove. So this is akin to that soft outer covering of the almond.
Right.
Whereas with something like a pea, well, you eat the pot of a pea, so that doesn't it's on the same category.
Okay, it could be, but that would go against what I told you before. I mean, that would say that what we tried to say before that it's okay. If it has one shell, but it's usually opened at home, I said that's okay to do. Your answer would basically go against that, which doesn't mean that it's wrong. It just means that that's going to create some more problems for us. So I'm not sure if we want to go there. I have to look at these things more. I see right now another answer that he gives here. Again, I don't know if this is bottom line, but he suggests he throws out the idea here that maybe there's a difference whether it's attached or not. I mean, in the case of a peanut or a walnut, maybe they're not actually attached to the shell. It's in the shell, but it's not attached to it. In this case, they're actually attached. So it's attached, it's worse. It's more of a problem with dush. It looks more like dush. Mm. That could be. If you say it that way, then I guess it would make sense. There would be a difference in this. So you would have to be machmer about this. So again, in the meantime, it seems the Shir Shabbos is machmer that these should not be opened on Shabbos. But again, I'll have to see. I have to read through a little more carefully and see if I can find the, to see if there's another way to explain it based on what we were saying. It would be mutter at the end of the day. Halachah l'maaseh also. Okay, so tzara chiyon on that one. Again, I apologize. I didn't have a chance to finish looking at that. But that's the story with these for now. I'll try to remember to tell you next week. Later in the Shmir Shas in Sif Mem Bet, so he asks, well, let's say the nuts that you are allowed to open up, all the nuts we talked about before. So he says here that you're allowed to open up those nuts even with a kli hamiyuchah b'kach, a normal utensil which is used specifically for opening open nuts. Mifatzecha goes in, nutcracker. It's mutter. Why? And he says you could use a hammer also if you need to, which is not normally done, but if you...
Why not?
So that's what he says. Why not? Right. So the answer is that if it's something which is permissible to on Shabbos, you're allowed to use a kli to do it. Even if you tell me that kli, like a hammer, is used normally for things that are muktzah, halacha muktzah is that if you're using it, if it's a kli shemachal iser, it's a utensil which is normally used for something which is aser, but you choose to use it for something which is mutter, that's what's called mitzorach gufo. Okay? You're allowed to use the utensil for something which is permissible to use on Shabbos. Correct, if it's a utensil.
Yeah.
Okay, not like sand or dirt, but a utensil. A hammer is a utensil. So a hammer does not have to be designated before Shabbos. So it would be mutzer to use a hammer, even a nutcracker or anything, which even would be mutzer normally, it would be mutzer to do this with it, because this is a permissible activity on Shabbos. Okay?
Right.
All right.
The topic of the question is that I don't think it has to do with things that are the opposite, like vegetable peeler. Why can't
okay, so that we have to get to Boer. All right.
This is a topic that they don't use a normal thing.
Yeah.
To cut it away differently.
So there are some posts that talk about maybe you can use a vegetable peeler on Shabbos. However, the problem with peelers is that in the halachas of Boer, there's going to be more of a problem of using a kli for Boer. Okay, so you have to discuss whether that's going to be a problem of Boer or not. But it seems to be that in terms of the nuts, there's no problem of Boer. Okay, why is that? So we have to work this out. Okay, we're not going to get into this now. But he explains here, okay, in the footnote here, explains that we'll get to it when we get to Boer. Okay, just remind me if I don't remember. All right. But it seems like even for halachas of Boer, also it's mutter. Okay, not just for dash. It's mutter, halachah l'maaseh, it's mutter to do that. Okay. Then he says here afterwards, the little thin shell that remains on the nut, he says that's also mutter to remove. That's what we said before. The only thing is, again, just make sure to do it right before you eat. Okay, that's in line with the Ramah before, and also the halachos of Borer, which we'll learn later. You should generally try to do it shortly before you eat, not like, you know, 10 hours
before. Let's say you're, you know, it's a half hour, whatever. It's before the meal, and you're preparing, you know, the salad or whatever you're preparing things for the meal, people are coming shortly.
Right.
Is that considered before?
Probably, yes, but again, we have to learn Borer. Okay, we'll have to learn what the definition of miyad is. Miyad means immediately. Yeah. Miyad means usually what the normal amount of time that it takes to prepare your meal and to be ready when you think your guests are coming. So if it's half an hour, it basically means you could do it if you think your guests are coming now, even if they don't show up for another hour, but you shouldn't do it before you go to shul. Yeah. Okay? Something like that. That's
you should do it, so to speak, in advance.
Yeah, correct. Again, the details, we'll see. There might be some slightly different opinions about it, but that's the general rule. That's what, you know, the basic idea of what's behind it, according to many posting. Again, there's some disagree, but the halakha mice, that's what we usually hold. Okay, that's the story with peels. We have a few more minutes. Let's just do one or two more things here. Just one important thing about dash to be aware. Okay, does dash in general apply to extraction or separation of things that do not grow from the ground? And the answer is no. Okay, dash applies to gedulei karka only, okay, things that grow from the ground. That's the general rule of dash. It would not apply to, let's say, an egg or anything else like that, which again might be a question of boer, but is certainly not dash. Okay, dash is only fruits and vegetables and things that we were just talking about now that actually grow on the ground. You would have extraction problems. Okay, we'll come back. Yeah, I guess it's good enough for now. The last point, which we're going to focus more on next week, this is going to be the main topic next week, but we'll just start now, just give you a basic idea, is another tolda. Okay, so one of the toldas of dash we mentioned is farik, is extraction. And the other major tolda, there's two more actually. One is chole, which is milking the cow, which we'll get into, we'll spend maybe a few minutes on it next week, but not a lot of time because it's not so practical for most of us. Most of us do not have cows here. But it is interesting when you think about how they do milk the cows and how it works with Shabbos. Well, that's actually some very interesting points about that. It explains a little bit about why some milks are mahadra and some milks are not. That we'll save for next time. Leave you on that thought, but the main tolda for dash is schita, is squeezing. Okay, what is squeezing? Squeezing basically is taking fruits or vegetables and squeezing the juice out. Okay, this is a major tolda, which is spends like there's like three daf in the Gemara in Shabbos that talk about this question of schita. What are the rules of schita? So we're going to do basically start just right now with one point, and then next we're going to go through some more of the details of when does schita apply and when does it not apply. Okay. I thought we'd get to it this week, but we spent more time working on the other stuff, which is fine. So we'll come back to it next week. But I'll just give you the basic idea. Okay, so the concept again of dash is extracting. Okay, what is extracting? Extracting basically means you take the inside part that you want from the outside part that you don't want. So in the case of squeezing, what are you doing? You're squeezing juice out of a fruit. When does it apply? When you want the juice. Okay, this is very different than squeezing. If your shirt got wet and you squeeze out the water, that's a very different kind of squeezing. That squeezing, you don't want the water. You're trying to get the water out of the shirt. Okay, that is going to be a different issue of malabing, of cleaning or laundering, which is not for now. That also is a malacha, but it has different rules. Okay, when it comes to dash, though, what this explains is that if you actually don't want the liquid that's coming out, that's going to make it less of a problem. Okay, which we'll have to see. But that's,
all of schita is from dash. So that the
this part of schita of squeezing fruits and vegetables for the liquid, for the juice, is dash. Okay. Okay. Again, squeezing to clean is malabing, and that has different rules.
Okay.
Okay, those rules are not the same as these rules. But for these rules, if you're squeezing but you don't actually want the juice, so it's going to be mutter. Okay, that's not going to be a problem. And that explains, again, part of the issue with the milk, of milking the cow on Shabbos, even if it's usser, that if you don't use the milk, so then there's room to allow it if the cow's in pain, all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. The same thing will be relevant also when we talk about, and we'll get to this next week, certain practical cases of squeezing. If you have fruits or fruit salad with liquid, okay, can you eat the liquid of the fruit salad? And it's actually a big shayla, but in the end, it could be that that part of the idea is if you didn't try to squeeze out because you wanted the juice, it just happened, maybe there's room to make it. We'll have to learn about it. Okay, that's an important point when it comes to squeezing. Now, what is usher in terms of squeezing? What are the categories of squeezing? This is what we'll end with. Okay, so if you look here at the Shulchan Aruch, the main siman of squeezing is siman Shin Chaf. Okay, siman Shin Chaf is the squeezing siman. We're not going to learn every halacha in siman Shin Chaf. We're going to learn a couple of them. We'll do like the first one, okay? We'll skip around and do parts of the first one, and then that'll be for tonight. He says, Zeisen v'anavim asur l'sachtan. Okay, you're not allowed to squeeze olives and grapes. And even if the juice came out by itself, it's also asur. That's a asur midra button. Okay? Why? Because we're afraid that if you allow yourself to come squeeze, to take the juice which is squeezed out, or the oil, so then you might come to squeeze it directly, which is asur mishum dash. Okay? If you skip a line, Then he says, "Tusim v'rimonim asur v'sachtan." Tusim v'rimonim, okay, berries and pomegranates, you're also not allowed to squeeze. And you also mean atzman. Okay, if it comes up by itself, then it depends why what you want to use it for, which we're not going to get into now. I just want to get the basic halacha here. Basically, and then the next line in the Shulchan Aruch, he says, "Shaar kol haperes mutar v'sachtan." All other fruits you're allowed to squeeze. What's pshat here? This is like this. Okay, in the Gemara it says that the main kind of squeezing is olives and grapes. That's asur d'oraisa. The primary d'oraisa squeezing is olives and grapes. Berries and pomegranates. Yeah, let me just say, hold on. Berries and pomegranates is asur d'rabban, according to the Gemara. Again, there's different opinions of the Gemara, but this is halacha. Okay, the halacha follows the opinion that says what we're saying now. Berries and pomegranates is asur d'rabban. All other fruits according to the Gemara, the opinion that we follow in the Gemara, is permissible. What's the pshat? So the idea is like this. Okay, so there's different explanations of why olives and grapes are significant. Either it's because
you needed what did you want?
That's true. They don't point that out in the construction of the Mishkan. They didn't use wine. So it's a good idea, but I don't think it's quoted anywhere. I don't remember seeing anybody that actually says that. It's a good suggestion. I don't think anybody says that because of that point, maybe because of the wine. But you have the right idea, though. Basically, what they say is either at that time, those were the most common fruits that were actually squeezed for juice or for the liquid. The other fruits, sometimes yes, sometimes no. I mean, berries and pomegranates were sometimes squeezed for the juice, but not on a regular basis. And olives and grapes were often squeezed for that purpose. The second opinion says that it's because those are more significant. Like, I think closer to what you were saying. Olives create oil. Oil is probably more valuable than the olives that it comes from. The same thing with the grapes. The wine that comes from the grapes is probably more valuable than the grapes that it comes from. So because of that, that's why Zeis and Vanam are more significant, and that's why those are asur d'oraisa. The other things basically is gzeira, because you might come to do it with olives and grapes also, and those sometimes you squeeze for juice. So halacha l'maisa today, and other fruits which are not normally squeezed at all for juice, is mutter. Today, the thing is, today we squeeze almost every fruit for juice. So it's going to be a question of whether it's d'oraisa or d'rabban, because if you say that the grapes and olives are significant because they're special, because the liquid is more important than the solid, so that's not true for oranges or for apples or anything like that. But it definitely is true. Those are very, very commonly squeezed for juice these days. You know, so common. So it's either going to be usher, d'oraisa, or d'rabban, but either way it's usher. Okay? And today, basically, almost all fruits are going to be usher to squeeze on Shabbos because of the fact that most fruits are squeezed today. Okay, that's basically the bottom line halacha when it comes to squeezing. The shalat is going to be, again, how do you work out, you know, let's say, like with fruit salads and grapefruits.
Lemon is a classic.
So lemon is a big shalat, so we'll have to talk about that also. Okay, lemons is a big shalat, because that the Shulchan Aruch says you're allowed to do.
Yeah, which is basically...
Exactly, that's very problematic. So we're not going to get to it now, but in Sif Vav, the Shulchan Aruch basically says you're allowed to squeeze lemons. And that's what he says. Three words, mutar l'shul l'munim. Okay, where did that come from? So we have to discuss that, whether that still applies as lemons there or not. It's a big machlokas. But the other fruits that everybody basically uses usher today, again, that's going to create some shallows when it comes to, let's say, grapefruits. If you eat a grapefruit and liquid comes out, or eat a watermelon and liquid comes out, is that a problem? Okay, did you just squeeze? Maybe you just violated this with the rest of Shabbos, or the Rabbanon at least. What do you do? So the answer is, we're going to work next week. We'll see what the Heterim are, but there definitely, we'll see. There probably is room to allow what you're doing. We have to learn. We have to go through it. Okay, so we'll stop here for now before we get to the 2 minutes of Machshava. But halacha, so next week again, we're going to continue with the rules of Schita and how to, some of these practical cases of grapefruit and watermelon, and then a few other practical cases of lemons, and then we'll see what else we have time for afterwards when it comes to Schita, and there's some other stuff about ice and water, making ice on Shabbos, squeezing ice, crushing ice on Shabbos. Those are all shilas when it comes to dash. Well, hopefully we'll have time for that next week also, I hope. Okay, any questions before we go to Machshava?
Yeah. Would you be able to see if you could check specifically in edamame?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's going to be part of this whole thing, okay?
So specifically, you know, whether eating edamame on Shabbos.
Yeah.
Problematic.
Yeah, I'll try that together with this one. Okay. Two little thoughts together as one here. We mentioned last time some thoughts from the Ali Shur from Rav Woldy. So he has two other interesting thoughts, which I'll share with you. Number one, two is actually, they're both really quoted from the Rishonim, but he happens to bring them both here, so I'll just tell you from the Rishonim. One is the Ramban, because the Ramban says that part of the idea of Shabbos is testifying about the creation. Can we know that? Shabbos, we testify about the creation of the world. Okay, Hashem created the world in six days and rested on the seventh. So the Ramban says that part of the idea of Zachor Siyon Shabbos L'Kadshah, to remember Shabbos, means not just remembering Shabbos on Shabbos, but also remembering Shabbos every single day of the week. Okay, it means that every single day of the week, you have to keep in mind Shabbos. And this is all based on the Gemara, actually. The Gemara says that there was a dispute between Shammai and Hillel about what to do. But Shammai, which is the Rabban, actually says that he should follow. He says he picked out, anytime he picked out anything good during the week, he said it should be for Shabbos. Okay, so again, to see what exactly how to do it today. But the idea is that Shabbos is kept in your mind every single day of the week. And that's a very, very important point. Okay, because usually we think of Shabbos as Shabbos. Okay? But you know, the idea is that Shabbos is such an important idea of our Amunah and about our fundamental belief in creation and God running the world, that Shabbos has to be remembered every single day. In addition to the understanding that the spirituality of Shabbos is something which should spark and push through our whole week. It should make our whole week different. Okay, the week is for working, obviously, but the point, while you're working, you should have a little spark of Shabbos in you that's retained from previous Shabbos, and you know, already on Wednesday, talking about, you know, L'chun Arana, the end of the Shir Shal Yom, we say the L'chun Arana, which is the beginning of Kol Shabbos. It's basically, the Shir Shal Yom of today is, I think it's Tzadi Dalet or Tzadi Hey, and the one right afterwards is L'chun Arana. So they start, we put in the last two lines of Shir Shal Yom as L'chun Arana to remind us that Wednesday is the beginning of the new Shabbos season, okay? Mm-hmm. Till Tuesday is the last Shabbos, and Wednesday is the Shabbos. So I'll come back in just a second. There's a very nice idea that I heard from my daughter, actually, at Shabbos, which I'll share with you in just a second. Before I get to that, so the other point he mentions here is from Rav Hirsch, that part of the idea of not doing melacha on Shabbos is the following. Not doing melacha on Shabbos, I'll say this for next time. Okay, we won't do it now. I'll say it for next time. Yeah, the nice idea about what melacha is on Shabbos, what's the symbolism of not doing melacha. I'll share with you the nice parts are, just in terms of what the Ramban says about remembering Shabbos every day. So my daughter had a bar Torah from school, which is beautiful, and I don't know where she got it from. It was a nice idea. It must be out there somewhere, but I couldn't find it myself. If somebody could find it for me, I'd be thrilled to hear it. Basically, last week's parsha, we learned about Rivka. Okay, this week's parsha also is about Rivka. So Rivka, when she got married to Yitzchak, so it says that Yitzchak was comforted. Why was Yitzchak comforted? So he was comforted because Sarah, his mother, had special blessing in her house. And one of the special three things that she had was a ner dolf me'er shalos ler shalos. She had a light that was lit, like a mirror, miraculously, apparently. Miraculous light that was lit from Friday all the way until the next Friday. Okay? And then Yitzchak was very sad when that was gone, and the other elements also of bracha with the dough and whatever else was there. Basically, that came back when Rivka came. Okay? So the thought that my daughter had from her teacher, again, I don't know where it came from, it's a beautiful idea. What's the significance, the symbolism of Ner Dolch Ner Shabbos, Ner Shabbos? Okay, so basically what the explanation was, that both Sarah and Rivka had exactly this point, meaning the symbolism of the candle being lit from Friday to Friday is that Shabbos was always on their mind. Okay, now I used to have some friends that were very very halakha when I was in Yeshiva in Shalavim. They worked very nicely with the Abinimin Chever here, the Karbach Chever, whatever, perfect Torah. But they always used to say, every day is Shabbos. Okay, well, hey, every day is Shabbos, right? They say that sometimes. Okay, so it's not really true, because again, there's a mitzvah to work during the week. But the idea behind it, you know, there is some truth to that. And basically, the concept of keeping in mind Shabbos every single day, every single time, have it in your mind that you're getting some of your koach, your spirituality is coming from that. So that's what the symbolism is of having the candle lit from Friday to Friday. So the Chazal say, many Chazal say that the Avos did keep the Torah. Okay? What does that mean? How many Avos? Okay, those are questions. But for these purposes, you can assume, let's assume for now that they certainly kept some form of Shabbos. Okay, if they kept some form of Shabbos, then basically what they're doing is Sarah and Rivka basically brought the light of Shabbos into their house the entire week. Okay, the whole week there was a light, the candle was there because, again, the candle was miraculous. Hashem made the candle stay lit all week long. But he did it because Sarah and Rivka had in their minds that the whole week was transformed because of the Shabbos. The spirituality and the flame of Shabbos extended through the week in every single action that they did. Okay, you could sense it. You could feel that the spirituality, the Amunah HaKadosh Baruch Hu of the creation of the world and the fundamental basis for everything, and you know, the inner idea of Shabbos and Ma'an Olam Hab and all that kind of stuff was reflected in their actions during the week as well. And you know, part of the idea for us, I guess, the we have to get to is, again, every day is Shabbos, every day is not really Shabbos, but the idea of remembering Shabbos every day and having a little bit of Shabbos every day and keeping the spark, the spirituality and the specialness of Shabbos every day is something that definitely we can definitely work on. You're down in the dumps and you have difficulties during the week, you say, oh, Shabbos is coming. But it's not just Shabbos is coming, it's also to feel I have a little Shabbos in me right now. If I could take that spirituality of Shabbos and push me along, even when I'm down, help me bring me back up, think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and all that kind of stuff, you think about Shabbos, so then we also can be so figuratively to have the near Dolok, near Shabbos, near Shabbos. We should all get to that level, that we all have Shabbos in us every single day of the week, and we look forward to Shabbos, and Shabbos is the highlight of the week that really lights up everything else. Shkorach.
Shkorach.
Thank you.